Disclaimer. The views and opinions you hear expressed by the participants in the show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. Enjoy the show! Everybody, welcome to AnCast. I'm Zach Burchie. Justin's here.
Hey, everyone.
It is a busy week, but we're gonna do a show anyway because we've taken, or rather, I've had to take a few too many hiatuses lately, and you know, I still want to do the show, so carved out some time. I mean, right now I'm in dereliction of duty because there's shows airing like right now that need to go into the preview guide. So.
Shame on you.
Yeah, all right. I gotta stop doing one thing for work and start doing another thing for work. But it's a good time of year. We're almost at the end of the preview guide. We got today is like the last heavy day for stuff. Today's Thursday, and then tomorrow it kind of calms down. And then we get to roll into daily streaming. So, never ends.
I was going to say, is there any real major break between the two?
No. Well, we're giving ourselves 1 week because we have to produce a poll for the readers to tell us which shows they really are excited about for daily streaming or they really want to see daily streaming coverage of. Because that's sort of the lesson we learned from last season is we should curate this more tightly, I guess. Like, we you know how AV Club covers shows that people care about and they drop shows where the readership is low or the, you know, there's not that many comments.
Right.
So we're going to do that. Which is, you know, last season there was, you know, at least four shows where there was really no discussion and low readership on the reviews. So it's like, well, you know, and we were covering like 31, 32 shows. So it's like, well, we can get this down to like an accurate, a little bit more accurate picture of what people actually want from the coverage and not just an everything approach. So that poll will be going up real soon. And after we get that poll, then I got to assign shows. We got to do the whole calendar and assign writers to everything. And then.
But basically, it goes down to 10 reviews a week instead of 10 reviews a day.
No, it's 30. It'll be about 30 some shows a week.
Oh, you're doing 30.
Well, presumably. I mean, we haven't done it yet, but when I say curate, we'll go from like 31 down to like 27. I mean, I don't know the exact numbers yet.
Like, okay, so you're only dropping a handful.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you can't drop too much because then you get people complaining that you're not covering enough. So, you know, you got to find that. You got to find the stuff where it's okay to drop it because no one's going to care.
Yeah.
And the only way you find out whether or not anyone's going to care is by asking them directly. So that's what the poll is for, right? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, fun times. Anyway, enough about that stuff. I mean, we'll talk about the fall season because that's what there is to talk about. But what's been going on with you?
Well, it's been kind of busy because, you know, I've been hosting my parents in town. They just left a few days ago. So yeah. I've been doing that and juggling work.
Wow, fun. Yeah.
Yeah, but I actually have been able to watch a few things here and there. I'm working on a couple discs right now, but my rule whenever I work on a disc is that I can't actually sit and enjoy watching the show while I'm working on it. Mm-hmm. So I always wait until I get the final disc, you know, sent to me. And then I'm like, okay, now that there's nothing I can do if I find something wrong, I'm going to watch this.
Right, you sort of take yourself out of the equation, then you can enjoy it.
Yeah, because if it's still, like, a hot project, I end up going to QC mode. And I'm just, yeah, like, you know, rather than reading the subtitles, I'm proofreading the subtitles.
Yeah, that's no fun.
Yeah. So, anyway, I finally got my copy of Time of Eve.
Oh, yeah. So I saw, like, Twitter was a bunch of, you know, you get all the photos of people having set it down on their desk and, you know, take a photo of it. So those went right out, right?
It is yes, it's finally out. In fact, I was one of the last people to get mine because, unfortunately, I actually contributed to the Kickstarter before I got tapped to do the disc.
Right. Well, yeah, so that's how that would work anyway, right?
Well, no, apparently the authoring house they were going to go with couldn't kind of melt it down when faced with the insane numbers of subtitles on that disc.
Yeah, right.
So they end up finding me, and I'm just like, okay, I can do that. But no, the package came out really, really nice, and you know, I'd actually never seen this show before. I'd seen little bits and pieces of it, and it seemed interesting. That's why I contributed, but I'd actually never sat down and watched it before. It's kind of amazing.
That's what I keep hearing. It is probably at the top of my pile of shame, given how many people have told me that it's kind of amazing.
Like, it's almost as if, you have to forgive the expression, but it's almost as if Mamoru Oshii was a happy person.
No, that makes sense.
Yeah, like, it's hopeful, it's poignant, but it has a really strong political message. And all I could think of the whole time watching it was, basically, you know how there's that giant resurgence going on right now of the insane right-wing anti-Korean foreigner sentiment?
Yeah, right.
Basically, I personally think it's a very strong critique of that. Except it just changes out Korean with Android.
Huh.
And it's incredibly effective. And basically the whole idea of these androids is that they're there to serve humans, but they've actually, you know, they keep themselves segregated, but oh, they actually have, they're actually basically human beings as far as emotions and you know, their processing of how to react among other people, and they're basically just like us. And so the whole thing, not a whole lot of time is spent on the science fiction aspect of that.
That's good.
It's more or less just kind of this, it deals both in microcosm and with a much wider worldview on how society and how individuals deal with that, either by pulling back and, you know, putting up a wall and you know, very firm line of separation, us versus them, or the more humanistic approach. And it's really really incredible on that level. It's a very, very smart piece of work. I'm really, really, really looking forward to that, the new one by the same director, Padma Inverted.
Yeah, we've got a review of that up on the site. It sounds unique.
I love the premise. I've not read anything because I don't want to spoil anything for myself, and I think the Blu-ray ships next month.
Yeah, right. That's a G-Kids thing?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, good on them for getting that stuff. I'm excited to see that Princess Kaguya thing.
Yeah, I am too. Actually, that comes into theaters in like a week, doesn't it?
Yes, super limited run, of course, but yeah, definitely. I might just wait for the Blu-ray. I don't know.
I'm not. It's Takahata.
Sure, but it's a, what, 10-minute drive for you? And that Blu-ray will probably be out in like a month.
Also true. G-Kids sometimes sits on stuff. They're a little unpredictable.
That's true. I'm excited to see that, though. But yeah, no, Potemkin Inverted, I definitely want to check that one out. But maybe I should watch this first. I mean, it's available.
Yeah, I mean, if you can get the disc, I'm not sure if they've gone on sale for non-backers yet. But if you can get it, by all means, watch it. The series cut might still be on Crunchyroll. I don't even know.
I'll check. I'm sure there are a variety of ways to watch it legally, and I will hunt one of those down. That's cool, though. Anything else?
Yeah, I finished the first simulcast I actually managed to keep current with in ever.
Really? What was that?
Free.
That's a good show.
I was actually pleasantly surprised. It's actually a really good show.
So you finished both seasons?
Yeah, and it's... Actually, I mean, it's surprised me by being, in its heart of hearts, neither a cheesecake show, well, I guess beefcake show, or a sports show, really. It's a really compellingly written coming-of-age drama about leaving behind something that you really loved when you graduate and having to suddenly choose a path for yourself. And you know, as much anime as takes place in high school, not a whole lot really gets in the nitty-gritty of how traumatic that is. And this, I thought, did an incredibly good job of it. I was very pleasantly surprised by it.
Yeah, it's funny to me, that show, because, you know, there was so much fanboy crying when it came out about, oh, you know, our Kyo Annie is being, you know, is being hijacked by the Fujoshi. But then after the show started airing and it went into the second season, everyone, you know, a lot of those guys were like, well, it's just a good show. That's just a quality television program. A lot of people really liked it. I keep meaning to get around to it, but it's a little lower on the list just because it is. I mean, what you say is true based on what I've read. You know, we did the daily streaming reviews on that one, and I've read a ton of reviews of Free, obviously. But it is fluff.
To an extent. It's no more fluff than any other, you know, high school youth, you know, coming of age story.
Wow.
Really. I mean, don't get me wrong, it's no colorful,
right.
But it, I mean, no one's, you know, on building's edge about to jump. But it gets pretty dark in places.
Right. Well, especially like towards the end of the second season. Like, I know it was like episode 9 or something where there was this big switch in tone, right?
I don't think it's that big a switch, really. I mean, it hints at where it's going, but yeah, I mean, it does get filled with a little bit of existential ennui.
Right.
And I'm not sure it really resolves itself as well as it could have, but that's fairly mild criticism for a show in general that was consistently compelling and watchable throughout, had characters that were not archetypes. I mean, they might have started off as, you know, archetypes as a jumping off point, but like a lot of the better KyoAni shows, it starts off archetypes and then kind of jumps off and kind of branches off from there. It almost just uses them as a template and then does its own thing. So yeah, it's a compelling show. I can't wait to buy the Blu-ray, especially should the first season somehow ever become available.
Yeah.
What a mess that is.
It's a twisty nightmare behind that one. Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, I got to get around to that. At some point, a lot of people really talked it up. Although, like, one of my favorite things recently that I saw for that was, I know that, like, towards the end of the second season, and it also happens, like, at the end of the first season, where they all have this sort of collective hallucination about the ocean. And
right.
Somebody did this illustration that was a big vertical piece where it's all the, you know, the boys, and they're swimming among like ocean creatures like dolphins, and there's like a killer whale in there.
Okay, yeah, that's dumb.
Yeah, well, they're swimming among these ocean creatures. But do you remember back in like the late 80s and like the 90s, they had those posters where it was like space and also whales and killer whales and dolphins and stuff?
And they were, oh, like, my God, yes. Yeah, yes, I do.
And it reminded me exactly of that. It was a really good illustration. But I had the free guys in it, and it made me laugh. I think I found it on, of course, it was on Tumblr, so.
Right.
But yeah, that made me laugh.
That's pretty funny. Okay, I did not think of that.
Okay, cool. So, anything? I mean, if you, I was going to get into to movies because I've actually seen a couple, but I didn't know if you'd been to the theater lately.
Movies. I have been watching stuff, but not new release stuff. So I'll let you take it away on that one.
Oh, okay. So a couple of things, two things I watched that I would actually recommend them both. First one being Gone Girl, which I thought was great. Really loved it. Lots to chew on in there. It's a really intelligent, complicated movie that's also really, really, really dark satire. Has a lot to say about the roles that society forces gender into. And it's very, very entertaining, so you'll enjoy yourself pretty much no matter what. And it's also really dark, and it's about it dark and cynical. It has a very dim view of humanity. But I can't recommend it enough. I really enjoyed it. I think you might actually like it too.
Yeah, that's definitely on my list to check out.
Yeah, and the only one thing I walked away from it, it's a David Fincher movie, and I'm a fan of David Fincher, although I thought he was totally wasting his time with the girl with the dragon tattoo.
I didn't even bother looking at that.
Yeah, because, you know, there was already a perfectly fine movie for that, and it's an airport book, so it's like sort of weightless crime, quote-unquote true crime drama kind of thing.
Right.
And the movie was bland. Like, it had his direction in it, so it looked really nice, but it was super bland. And I was worried, like, this book, this is based on a book that also sort of is an airport book, had a lot more subversive material in it, but I was concerned. And those concerns were not valid. I am shocked that, because David Fincher makes kind of dude bro-y movies.
You know, yeah.
He made The Social Network, for fuck's sake. This movie is about women, and it's a very nuanced... It has a bunch of very nuanced messages about women. Some of them very dark, some of them very progressive. But it ultimately is about that, and that a movie like that's that nuanced and that intelligent about it, coming from someone like David Fincher, I did not expect. I did not expect a really great movie, really thoughtful film about. Gender to come from the guy who directed Fight Club.
Yeah, that's fair.
So, yeah, good stuff. The other thing I saw was Harmontown, the Dan Harmon documentary.
Oh, how was that?
I liked it. It's kind of an asterisk on that. So it's a good documentary. It's specifically about him at his sort of lowest point. So it's right after he got fired from Community at season 3, and then he took his podcast on the road. So most of the movie is, actually the entire movie, is his road show. It's him going across the country and taking his podcast to his audience out there, which had built up to this, you know, fervent mass by the end of the third season of Community. And he had become a martyr figure to them at that point anyway because he had been fired.
Right.
So the whole movie is following this guy. And it's no mystery that, like, everyone, like, if you hear anything about Dan Harmon, it's that, one, he's really funny, and two, he has a giant ego and is impossible to work with. This movie does not do anything to dispel you of that notion. It's pretty unflinching. I'm surprised he let some of it into the film, because there are moments where he is flat out just, there's no other word you can use to describe it. He is emotionally abusive towards his girlfriend. How she tolerates it, I don't know. But he's... And he acknowledges it, and he's so self-aware. Like, the guy's really, really smart. Like, he's painfully intelligent. And it comes with a self-awareness that, like, a lot of people don't... I don't know if a lot of people don't have it, but a lot of really, really intelligent, creative people tend to suffer under this crushing self-awareness. And he's aware enough to know that I'm an asshole. He's aware enough to know I can be really abusive. And it's the way he first describes him being emotionally abusive, he's clearly proud of it. He's clearly proud of his ability to crush people using his words. And then later he is aware of that being shitty. So I turned to Hope, who I was watching this with, and said, like, you know, I can identify with this level of self-awareness where you are basically running around in a maze of hypocrisy all the time. It's a very revealing, sometimes frustrating, but entertaining piece of work about a really difficult person who really is just trying to make people happy, but is constantly getting in his own way. And is clearly a conflicted person. I saw this just a couple of days ago, but I had recently finished watching Rick and Morty, and that show is distilled him. Like, it could not be any more that guy than it is. So I don't know. I recommend it. You can get it on like Amazon on demand. It's on video on demand services already. So if you're interested in him, or if you like Community or Rick and Morty, definitely watch the documentary. Cause I think at the very least you are spending an hour and a half or so with complicated and intelligent people talking about themselves, which is interesting. So
right.
I enjoyed it.
Actually a good friend of mine wrote on the that was the fifth season that just aired, right?
Yeah.
And he's apparently coming back for the Yahoo trying again.
Yeah.
Basically, we didn't see him for 6 months.
Yeah.
By the time we all saw him again, he had gained a bunch of weight and a bunch of facial hair and seemingly permanent dark circles around his eyes. It looked like the experience had aged him substantially. He didn't really tell me anything, but at the same time, he seemed incredibly grateful for the experience.
Well, it's weird because that's mirrored in the film because Dan Herman worked on the Sarah Silverman show and was fired from the Sarah Silverman show by Sarah
Right,
Silverman.
Famously.
Yeah, by Sarah Silverman, who tells the story in the film and sort of punctuates it with, "I'm his biggest fan and I fired him." So that says something about what it's like to work with him. Yeah, it's a lot of people that look exhausted when you bring up his name, but seem grateful for the experience of having been in his presence. It's strange.
I think everyone would agree at this point that he is a genius that probably has about half the DSM-5.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, no, that's a good point. I highly recommend it if you're interested in him as an artist and in his work. It's a must see, I think, for sure. So anime, lots of that. I talked about it on Twitter and a little bit in the forums, but I finished Terror and Resonance and I did not like it.
No.
I thought it was a wasted opportunity that sort of clipped its own balls off by making the two lead characters, they never kill anyone. It's all bloodless terrorism where they're blowing up buildings and police stations and aircraft.
What?
And they blow up an airplane. there's no one on
what?
It. This show is frustrating.
Yeah, no shit.
They introduce so these two kids are the product of government experimentation to create a spoiler alert for Terran Resonance. They are the product of a government program to create hyper intelligent, hyper capable, hyper competent young people so that Japan can finally rise back to glory out from under the yoke of the United States, which has been keeping them down since World War II, and they need a return to their glorious military days.
I like that this is basically the child equivalent of Data Dogs.
Kind of. And so the message is an anti-militarization, anti-right-wing, you know, because there's a lot of that going on in Japan right now, the shift towards the really hardcore right-wing rhetoric.
Right.
And this is speaking out against that. It's also talking about, like, here's what this attitude is doing to our children. You know, we're putting them through this horrible situation. It has some parallels. It has some lines that rhyme a little bit with Penguin Drum on this stuff. You know, the child burner thing.
Child boiler.
Yeah, child boiler, sorry.
I really wish they made merchandise of that.
You want the playset?
Yes.
The Lego Penguin Drum child brawler. there's some lines that rhyme with Penguin Drum. But ultimately, what the show winds up saying is nothing unique about terrorism, or nothing even interesting about terrorism at all. The basic premise is that if you follow the show and you follow all the lines through it, it's chiefly about Japanese nationalism as it relates to terrorism. So what they're basically warning is this hardcore attitude about the military and this shift in perspective towards this grand scheme of militarization is going to create, as a result of the United States' unwanted interference, will create terrorists. The most common thing said about terrorism is that, you know, superpowers with a terrorism problem invariably created that terrorism problem themselves, right? So it's like the most standard, like bog standard statement about terrorism you could possibly make.
Yeah.
Personally, I think for a show that deals with terrorism and literally traces over 9/11 rubble footage in some of the episodes, in the second episode, it opens with a background that is clearly traced over shots of 9/11 rubble, intending to be this building in Roppongi or whatever it was. It's a government building in Roppongi. I think it's in Roppongi. If you're going to do that, you better have something to say about terrorism. That's interesting, I think. I think it's irresponsible to use that kind of imagery and to have your entire show be about terrorism. At no point do they even touch on what it's supposed to mean, what terrorism... It touches a little bit on where terrorism comes from, but it doesn't ever say anything more than that. It doesn't really have the balls that it needs to say something shocking. I mean, the person who wrote it, quote-unquote, which is Watanabe, this is like a him thing, uses a pen name because he thought what he was writing was so shocking. And it might be in Japan, but as a Western viewer, I can't look at what it's saying and get anything new out of it. Because we're inundated with this stuff. So it's a weird viewing experience, and ultimately kind of amounts to nothing. It's a bit of a waste. Terror in Resonance. I wish they had gone further or had more to say.
Wow, that sounds just completely ballless.
Yeah, pretty much. That's kind of where it wound up. Like, it kept building and building and building and building to all these things. And, you know, there's a line in there that's so dumb. So dumb. The lead detective who conveniently... There's nukes involved in this, by the way. The kids have a stolen nuke. The lead detective who's investigating them and figuring out their riddles, and the entire first half of the show is the show repeating itself with cat and mouse games between the terrorists and the detective, and they keep leaving really obvious riddles that anyone with Google could solve for him to figure out. And he naturally has like a relative or a friend or something who happens to be studying nuclear technology in college, so she's feeding him answers and shit. He says at one point, "Oh, these guys aren't like other terrorists. They're trying to have their voices heard. They have something to say." That's every terrorist.
That's the definition of a terrorist.
They're not like other terrorists. They're trying to tell us something.
The fuck? What are you trying to say, boy? What are you trying to say?
Yeah, what the fuck, man? I don't know. I did not respond to it very well. I mean, not that I expect a Japanese show about terrorism to necessarily cater to what a Western audience would find new, interesting, exciting, or shocking about terrorism, but even from a domestic terrorism angle, something that would be relevant, I would assume relevant to a Japanese audience, they didn't do it. They didn't touch on that stuff. So it's not like Am Shinrikyo stuff. They don't really touch on that. This is big, wide-scale, modern shock terrorism that they're talking about. Like Penguin Drum was talking about the kind of domestic terrorism that Japanese people have dealt with and is in their cultural memory. This show doesn't do that. So it's just fucking weird. Anyway, so there's that. And fall season, so far there's a couple of good shows. There's one that came out today that looks pretty interesting. That's like an Animation Runner Kuromi type thing that I knew nothing about it, but early reviews are starting to pop up and it looks pretty interesting. So I got to check that out. I think it's called Shiro Bako or something like that. But stuff that I liked was Fate Stay Night, which is just gorgeously animated. I don't know about the story on that one. Like, the visual novel's pretty, you know, it's a visual novel. So, yeah, there's that. There's the new Trigger show, the Supernatural Battles one, which I didn't think had any shot at being good. I mean, it's based on a light novel, again, about junior high school kids with superpowers. It sounds terrible, but the show's pretty good. The show's okay. It's funny. It's Trigger. Okay. Like, you know, they kind of know what they're doing. Never watched Kill la Kill, right?
No, but, you know, it doesn't matter who it is. It's the writing on those things.
Yeah, but I don't think they would take a project that they didn't think they could do something with. Like, Trigger's in a position where they can, you know, they decide what projects they're going to take.
Are they?
That's what I assumed. I mean, everyone's like, oh, Trigger Show. What about this is going to be you know, unique to them. And they've got, it's got a little bit of their stamp on it. I think Ninja Slayer, which comes out next year, will be much more of a trigger show than this. But they made it entertaining and exciting and fun and funny. So,
okay.
You know, it's worth checking out. That could be totally wrong that they're in a position to actually pick their projects. Maybe they're not, but it seems like they would only take something that sort of at least kind of fit into what they wanted to make. I don't know. So that's good. And that Rage of Bahamut Genesis thing, which nobody thought was going to be anything based on a fucking card game, pretty good. Like, surprisingly good. It's MAPPA, and they obviously dumped a bunch of money into it because it looks really expensive, and it's pulling from American adventure movies, so the camera moves a lot, and it's really cinematic, and it's not all chock-a-block with really standard fantasy anime stuff. It's more standard American fantasy stuff, but it's visually it's dynamic and exciting to watch.
It looks very different.
Yeah, story-wise, I didn't pull too much out of it, but
okay.
It's, you know, rogue. It's lovable rogue hero and stuffy, stuck-up guy you will eventually find lovable, and then mysterious girl go on fantasy adventure. The card game mechanics that are in it are wisely mostly hidden. I mean, you can kind of tell because they're all summoning monsters, and they don't, like, literally, like, pull out cards from the game to summon monsters like they would in, you know, another show based on a card game. But it's disguised enough so where it looks like it's just part of the fantasy world. It's not like, hey, kids, buy this game. It's, at least they're trying to just tell a story. So,
right.
It's Hope, like, loved it. I was okay with it. I thought it was fine. Mm-hmm. So far, that's kind of the good stuff. Oh, and Parasite, which came out yesterday, is amazing.
Yeah, if I just watch one show this season, I'm probably going to watch that.
Just the animation. Like, the animation's great. It's really expressive. Like, the lead character is just, you know, anime, the animation budgets on these things are usually really low. So there's not a lot of I don't want to say Western style, but the faces don't move that much.
Right.
The lead character in Parasite is really expressive. He's got some squash and stretch to him, but the good kind, not the unintentional kind. It's beautifully animated. I thought it was sort of darkly funny and gross and a lot of body horror and yeah, it's super good. Like, I only listed that last because I'm looking at the big board here and, you know, picking stuff out. But that's the standout so far is Parasite.
Yeah, there's lots of. There's usually a lot to choose from. It seems like this season has been just slightly more mediocre than most lately.
I wouldn't disagree with that. Most everything is getting. You know, I think the average is like a 2.5 or something like that across the shows, and people just don't seem. There's a few things they're excited about, and there's one giant controversial one, that's kind of par for the course. But there's more. I feel like there's more chaff this time. Stuff that just isn't going to catch on. You know?
Right.
And I can't believe how bad World Trigger is in terms of production. Like, maybe some of the worst animation I've seen in a modern show made by a studio that has money.
Wow.
Just, you know, based on a hit Shonen Jump manga, and it looks like it was animated by a bunch of children. Like, it is slapdash, and I think that's being maybe kind to it.
That's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
That takes doing.
It's yeah. I don't know. It's Toei, though. You know, they kind of... Sometimes they kind of shit stuff out.
Yeah, just a bit.
That's anime for now. There's a few things on the horizon that I haven't quite taking a look at yet, but once we get past preview guide, then it's into daily streaming, so, you know. I am kind of shocked, you know, actually, one thing I did want to mention, so World Trigger is super, super cheap, based on a smash hit manga. Terraformars, also super, super cheap, based on a smash hit manga. Like, I understand these are just commercials for the books.
Right.
But you think if you have a big hit show and people are like, yeah, I really want to see that animated, you would spend more than $5. Like, Terraformars looks like shit. It is.
But is really it still savagely racist?
Well, you know, depending on your take. Yeah, I think it's unintentional, but it definitely is. I just, there's no way around it. Like, how can you look at those character designs and not whatever? At least other people are, you know, some people are on board with that, but then you get the usual, like, automatic knee-jerk reaction to saying anything like that about anything these days. Show could be called I Hate Mexicans and be about a guy who hates Mexicans, and people will go, well, it's not racist, and you guys are wrong because, you know, everything's not racist, so. it's too bad, like, but all that aside, like, that stuff's in the manga. The show looks like junk, and it's a rookie studio. I think it might be their first production. So maybe that explains it, but I don't know. All right, so anything else you've been watching, or should we move on to the questions?
Let's move on. Okay. Most of my recreation time has been spent eating.
What else is new?
Touche.
All right. Yanagi808 asks, how's the new review system working for the site? So far, so good. Like I said, we made some tweaks to it. Traffic's been good on that, and people do seem to enjoy keeping up with them so far. I mean, a few people have decided it's not for them, and, you know, they don't necessarily need a weekly review of something, but plenty of people apparently do. So, you know, it's a success so far. We're going to keep going with it for as long as it remains popular. All right, Land of Obscusion asks, you ever rewatched something that you hated only to actually enjoy it the second time? This is one of those on-the-spot questions. It's, like, impossible to...
I'd have to really think about that.
In terms of... Well, okay, so... This is one of those things where a lot of time has to have passed, and I have to have kind of changed as a person in order for my opinion of something that I watched to change. So I could revisit stuff from 10 years ago when I was a kind of a different person, and maybe I would have a different take on it. But that, like, you have to... I guess my thesis here is you have to change as a person in order for you to suddenly love something that you once hated. Does that make sense?
Well, also, I mean, I'm not really the sort of person to go, I really hate this. I'm going to commit this crime on my brain again.
Yeah, I'm going to give it another shot, even though I fucking hated it the first time. Yeah, you have to have, like, an immense amount of spare time and nothing else to do to go back to stuff that you hated.
Or someone that you really, really, really respect has to basically force you to watch it.
Yeah, that's another thing. If I say, oh man, I hated that, and somebody gives me a, like, good argument that, no, I think you should take another look, here's why, then absolutely, I'll go back and take another look at it with that in mind. But those are sort of the circumstances under which that happens, and it's really rare. Like, it doesn't happen that often. At least not in my experience.
Yeah.
So, I guess the answer to your question is, I can't think of anything off the top of my head.
There are plenty of shows where I've grown out of it, and plenty of shows where I have a different opinion of it, but liked it before and liked it still. Not one where I hated it before and I started liking it. I don't think that's happened.
Yeah, I've definitely had it where I appreciated something for different reasons. Like, I loved this as a kid and now I appreciate it for different reasons as an adult. Like, that's a thing.
But, sure.
Okay. Spazzy McGee asks, now that you've been watching it, do you think you'll do a JoJo-only Ancast? So a lot of people actually ask me about this, because I've been watching JoJo's Bizarre Adventure.
And enjoying it, from what I can gather.
It's very entertaining. It is a very entertaining show. My hesitancy to do an entire podcast about it is, what do you talk about for an hour at something as simple as JoJo's Bizarre Adventure? I don't know what there is to talk about. It's a really fun, really entertaining action-adventure show with a lot of silliness in it. What else is there to say? It's not, like, thematically deep. There's nothing to dig into there. There's no, like, analytical meat on that proverbial bone. There's nothing to chew on. So, no? Right now my answer is no. I'm not into Stardust Crusaders yet, though. Like, I'm about to finish part two. then I got part three. But my goal was to be completely caught up by January, which is when it resumes. So maybe I'll have a different answer for you then. But right now, I'm kind of like, what are you going to talk about for an hour? Like, you sit around and talk about, well, what's your favorite character? That's boring. So, I don't know. Man, I don't know. All right. Our friend Jeff Tebbets asks, general opinions on short-length anime shows, like under 5 minutes. I'm going to expand that to under 10 minutes. Any recent favorites?
Those tend to be so insubstantial, I forget about them as soon as I see them.
Yeah, that the format. I don't care for the format. 5 minutes, and they
you can't do any substantial storytelling in that time.
And those shows have credits, so you're talking right. about 2.5 tops, 3 minutes of story or anything to chew on. 7 minutes if it's a 10-minute show. I don't like. They can be funny, I guess, but like. That's the kind of thing where put it all on one disc, and it's like it'll, you know, the entire quote unquote season will be the length of like a movie, and you know, then I might sit there and watch the whole thing. But people don't even release those on Blu-ray or anything, DVD. So yeah, they're just so ethereal.
Yeah, they're kind of the anime equivalent of YouTube sketches.
Well, what purpose do they serve? I mean, do they run these things in between shows and?
Yeah, basically they're time fillers, or they string them together as part of a bigger program.
Oh, so it's like a 3-hour block of animation with...
Right, like, well, more like a 1-hour block of, like, here's some hosted segments, here's, you know, it's sort of like how Simpsons used to be on Tracy Ullman.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so I generally don't watch them. I took them out of the preview guide because what's the point of reading 400 words on something that would, you know...
Longer than the script.
Yes. Longer than the script, so what's the point? Yeah, I don't know. People really like some of them. I know Good a Good of Fairies has a cult following, and generally, like one or two of them will come out and somebody go, "Oh, it's pretty good," but they don't have like fervent fan bases. There's never like an outcry when you don't cover a 5-minute show. All right. I think this has a typo in it. I'm gonna, if I'm getting this wrong, sorry, but Dato4 asks, what fall movies are you looking forward to? Anything on your radar?
Well, Interstellar, obviously.
That's not an obviously for me.
No?
I'm a big skeptic on Chris Nolan. I think he's either watchable or fucking awful, and I really don't like his no emotion allowed worldview. It's so cold.
I usually find his stuff entertaining, if nowhere near as smart as it thinks it is.
Yeah, somebody said something to the effect of Chris Nolan makes movies for not particularly smart people to think they're really smart watching a movie for smart people.
Well, yeah, that's definitely true.
That's what the exception is, for sure.
Yeah. I probably wrote off at least 5 or 6 different people on my Facebook wall just going, oh my god, and like basically going all Evangelion fanboy on Inception.
The people and saying it was confusing really got me. It's not confusing.
Well, to be fair, we're used to nonlinear narratives just being anime fans. If you're not used to that, I can see it being kind of a, you know, your brain being a snow globe after that.
Yes, Leonardo DiCaprio doesn't do anything but sit around and explain what's happening the entire movie. That's it. It's like all of his dialogue is explaining what's going on.
Look, I'm not defending these people. That said, honestly, the main reason I want to see it is because it's the last hurrah for actual film IMAX.
Oh, right, the 70mm stuff, right?
Yeah, which is, you know, we are nearing, this is probably going to be the last time to see anything that clear on a screen that is 7 stories tall.
Yeah, I may make the journey. Unfortunately, it's 3 hours long. His longest movie ever, in fact.
Better bring a pee bucket.
Yeah, let's bring a. Well, you know, you drink the soda bottle and then.
Right, and then repurpose the soda bottle.
Yes. Circle of life. I'm looking forward to seeing it. But it's just, like, looking at the trailers and everything, it's like, oh, good, the coldness of space.
Right.
For perhaps that will be reflected in the characters somehow. It looks neat. I like some of the visual homages and stuff that are on display in the trailers. So, of course, I'll see it. But I'm excited about the new P.T. Anderson, which looks like he's back in sort of Boogie Nights mode, kind of making something a little bit more entertaining.
I hope so, because I had a real tough time with that Scientology movie he made.
The Master. It's the most difficult of his films, I think, and the least conventionally entertaining. This one looks like he's maybe going for a little bit of a Big Lebowski kind of vibe. But the reviews are already starting to come out, so, you know, people are saying it's great, of course. But, you know, Anderson's my favorite director. Like, when he puts something out, I'm excited about it, and even I get a little tired of the fellatio that happens every time one of these guys puts a movie out. Like, it's hard to get an opinion where somebody is willing to look at the flaws in one of these, you know, sort of modern master films like David Fincher. Like, David Fincher puts out a movie, it is a circle jerk.
Honestly, I mean, this happens, and I've noticed this happening for over a decade, where if you're a film, like, if film nerds are truly, truly excited about a movie, it will completely pull the wool over their eyes for at least a year following its release.
Yeah, and then after a year, they'll be like, well, you know, and then the real.
I mean, digging. Do you remember how many 4-star reviews there were of Star Wars Episode I?
A lot, but that's much more populist. I mean, we're talking about darlings of the film community. So,
sure, but I think it's the same effect in the end.
I think you're absolutely right, although it's a little less pronounced. So, like, and these are most of my favorite directors. So Wes Anderson, P.T. Anderson, David Fincher. Like, I love these guys. I love their work. But the reviews, like, I'm like, okay, well, I'll see it for myself. You know, there were people saying The Master was, oh, it's P.T. Anderson's greatest film, and your life won't be the same once you see it. And I saw it, and I was like, all right.
People said that?
Yeah. Pre-release.
Oh, okay.
These are festival screenings, and, like, before it actually comes out in anything resembling a wide release that you or I could actually go to a theater and see. That's always the way with these guys. And I love them all. I love their work, but yeah, it's tough. But I'm looking forward to that.
I'm looking forward to Big Hero 6.
Yeah, it'll be
I'm with an asterisk. I'm a little worried because Marvel.
Well, sure. I'm hoping the Marvel house style isn't oppressively applied to that movie. I don't know.
They have stated outright that it is not intended to match up with the Marvel Universe, so thank God for that.
Yeah, that's good. I didn't know that, so that's good.
Yeah. Like, it is entirely intended to stand alone, so dodged a bullet.
Yeah. Disney Feature Animation has been putting out really solid stuff for the last couple of years, so last, like, 4 or 5 years, so it'll, I'm looking forward to it. The premise has me less than engaged, but I'm a willing participant. I will happily go sit. There's some other stuff, but I'm really bad at coming up with the stuff off the top of my head.
Yeah, while you were talking, I pulled up IMDb's list of upcoming.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Let's see. Imitation Game, I'm intrigued by the idea of, but am worried about its execution.
That's the Benedict Cumberbatch one, right?
Yeah, Alan Turing biopic.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I'll go see Hunger Games because I do like Hunger Games.
Right, sure.
That's pretty much it. It doesn't look like a super exciting. Most of the big Oscar buzzy movies haven't really been scheduled. I mean, they probably have something on the schedule, but they're not on the list I'm looking at anyway.
Yeah. Well, the big Oscar bait movies. I'm not even sure, like, what they are. Normally by this time of the year, I'm pretty aware of, like, which movies are expected to be at least contenders.
Well, I've been hearing I had been hearing that it was pretty bleak at the film festivals this year.
Yeah. Yeah, the most buzz I heard was for that documentary about, which I'm dying to see, the documentary about the New Line version of Island of Dr. Moreau.
Ooh.
With Val Kilmer and Marlon Brando.
Yeah, I do want to see that.
Yeah, but I've heard more buzz about that. And that probably says something about like the sites I read and stuff, but I've heard more buzz about that than any other movie playing festivals right now.
that's not promising.
Yeah. Okay, moving on here. Vinny of AGC asks, thoughts on Sunrise and Gundam streaming? Well, I wish they'd get their shit together.
Right?
There's no good reason to not just have Gundam, Tomino's new Gundam show, airing along with it. They're putting Gundam Build Fighters 2 up there. Why not the new one?
Just get over it. Put your shit on Hulu like everyone else. I mean, things that never found an audience before are really finding an audience there.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, I mean, so there was the UK site was like all the anime. Is that Madman?
Yeah. No, that's Anime Limited.
Okay, so they put the first episode of Gundam up on their site as like free SD preview for Gundam G Reconquista or whatever. It is a free preview for people who, you know, haven't decided whether or not they want to pay us for the HD stream, but they forgot to region lock it. So I watched the first episode that way, and it is Tomino just pure strength. It is weird. Like, it's cut like a show from the 70s. It looks kind of like a show from the 70s with a spit shine, with an HD polish on it. The colors are sort of muted pastels. It jumps around from scene to scene without much sense of forward purpose. Not a lot of explanation. Like, it's weird. It's a product of the 70s. It's like someone took a time machine back to the 70s and made a show with knowing what he knows from this era. It's weird.
That doesn't seem like a compliment.
I'm not sure it is. I don't know what it is.
Well, Tomino's writing has always been atrocious. I'll just say it outright. It's been atrocious. His characters, you know, nearly universally lack clear motivation for whatever they're doing. It's always been kind of a head screw to figure out what the hell is going on in a Tomino show.
Yeah.
So, but that was a lot more common in the 70s. So, yeah, I could see that within a context of a show made brand new being really kind of what the hell is this?
Yeah, it's weird. But you know, back to the question. I don't know. I wish they would just stream it, because this stuff is always hyped. Doesn't matter. You put Gundam on something, it's going to have a lot of attention on it. We would love to be able to cover it. So just do what everybody else is doing, please. It would just make my life easier. All right. RNDSPMM, have either of you read the Fate Stay Night visual novel, or any visual novel for that matter?
I've gone through some visual novels, but not that.
I have.
Not in a long time.
Well, there's no legal way to play it. You have to get the Japanese version, and I mean, I guess you could buy a copy of the Japanese version and then apply the English patch. I guess you could do that. But the way most people play it is by pirating it, so I haven't done that. But I did watch somebody play through a bunch of it on Twitch, so I'm very familiar with the story. I haven't seen the whole thing myself, and I know this is like a Type Moon fan thing where they it's like you're in a congressional hearing if you have an opinion about a Type Moon show, because then they want to come in and be like, well, have you read the whole thing? Well, have you read the side stories? Well, did you read this side story? Did you read this one special chapter of a side story that was only available in this one thing? Like, no, I haven't done any of that. It's not that tough to figure this stuff out. I'm familiar enough with it to know what's happening, which is why I was confused by the first episode of the new show. Visual novels, other than that, the only other one I've played extensively was this game called Cinders, which is on Steam. And it's a good game. It's a really unique, kind of screwed up, but very mature, well-written take on Cinderella's story, with really, really gorgeous, sort of Baroque-esque art. I liked it a lot. I don't think I ever finished it. I should go back and finish it. That's the only one I've played a lot of. But yeah, other than that, I mean, I haven't put a lot of time into visual novels.
Yeah, I mean, they take so much time to get through.
Well, you're reading a book.
Right.
A really long book in most cases. Fate Stay Night is like, it's like 30, I think they said it's 30 hours or something like that.
Oh my God.
It's 30 hours just reading. It's fine, but, you know.
Do you have any idea how much shit is on my Kindle that I haven't gotten to?
Yeah, really. No kidding. Me too. I'm excited. I got that. I finally plunked down and got that the book John Waters wrote about hitchhiking across the country.
Oh, nice.
Where he walked out of his house one day and put his thumb out and wrote a book about the experience.
Hmm.
I'm excited to read it, but I still haven't gotten to it yet.
I bought that book about the making of Network, and I haven't gotten to that either.
Oh, yeah, that came out. I got to get that.
Yeah, I got through the first, two chapters, and it's good so far, but it barely started talking about the movie.
Yeah, no, I gotta find that. I gotta track that down. All right, Madman 400 asks, thoughts on the death of Saturday morning cartoons?
They haven't been relevant in a very long time.
Well, it's not so much a death of Saturday morning cartoons, it's a death of that as a means of consumption for animated programming for children. Cable primetime is where animated programming for children lives. So your Nickelodeons, your Cartoon Networks, they own that space, and it's all primetime and after school on their cable channels. So yeah. The Saturday morning stuff, kids don't even watch, every kid I see now has an iPad. If I had an iPad when I was 10, I wouldn't ever look away from it either.
And kids don't these days. I mean, no one under 18 even looks at a large TV unless they're playing Xbox.
Right, yeah. Otherwise, the device, the handheld device, is what is used to watch television. And you can curate things. So, if I had kids, I would probably curate a Netflix playlist and then put them down in front of the iPad and, you know, away you go. Rather than especially, paying for a cable package or making sure I have the terrestrial channel, and then the kid is up at a certain hour so he can watch this stuff and take in all of these commercials and, you know, for sugary cereals and overpriced toys.
Yeah, I mean, maybe this is, bougie LA guy talking, but I wouldn't want my kid watching that shit. I mean, that is, going back and watching the garbage that we watched when we were kids, it is mind candy. It's a miracle that we don't have severe mental problems.
Are you suggesting that there's no intelligent writing in He-Man and the Masters of the Universe?
All I know is that our big shared generational communal experience is that we can all recite from memory the Christmas version of the Fruity Pebbles jingle.
That's true.
And that's fucking weird.
It is weird. But if you had if you filled an arena with people our age, the majority could do that.
Oh, absolutely. In fact, probably 95%.
Yeah. That's a good point. Yeah, no, I don't particularly. There were a bunch of articles lamenting the end of Saturday morning cartoons. I was like, if I were, I would rather be a kid now and have the kind of options, watch anything I want, anytime. Yeah, that's much better than Saturday morning cartoons.
Well, and you can see the effects of this kind of permeating. If you know anyone with kids around, 7 to 14, they largely don't even want toys that much. They want the same things that we do. They want a nice new smartphone and, some iTunes credit, and they're happy. That I think of all the crap that we bought when we were kids. Because, we just wanted to try it out because we saw it on TV.
Right. Yeah. But,
how is this not an improvement?
Or specifically, they want the smartphone, the iTunes credit, and Call of Duty and Minecraft.
Right.
That's what takes up their time. That's a big chunk of, kid mind share is that stuff. And it's just options. Diversity and availability killed Saturday morning cartoons. There you go.
There was a better option.
Yeah. I mean, I had a friend who worked on it, so I watched that Star Wars thing that Disney put out. Just the commercials alone, I was like, holy shit. I do watch Steven Universe, which is on Cartoon Network, and so occasionally I'll catch, one commercial. But they are so over the top, it is just blind manipulation.
It really is, and I can't picture willfully doing that to my kids, knowing that that's having been there and knowing just that your brain is silly putty at that point. You will just march in any direction that that glowing box tells you to.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, I am a serial SE, not CE, consumption machine. And that is probably the effect that those that watching all that shit as a kid had on me is the just constant desire for new things. Consumption. I can sit in my living room, and I know you're the same way, surrounded by entertainment options, and just be bored because there's nothing shiny and new right in front of me. Like, you could fill your house with nothing but entertainment and be bored because there's nothing new.
Yeah, it's true.
And it's probably the result of all that shit that I consumed as a kid. Anyway, moving on. Ginga Bulls asks, after finishing Haikyuu, I was wondering if all sports anime that are adrenaline rush inducing are... I was wondering if all sports anime are that adrenaline rush inducing, for example, Slam Dunk and Hajime no Ippo. No.
No, the good ones are,
the
but...
The good ones are. Yeah, the fun ones, the ones that really get you going, yeah, those are super exciting.
Ippo, the first season definitely is, or the first series, the one that Genion put out. The second and third seasons have been, just okay.
Yeah, Slam Dunk is pretty slow-paced.
Yeah, it hasn't really aged all that well.
Yeah, it hasn't. I still like it, but it's a character drama that doesn't move very fast, and... spends a lot of time on basketball, so it's not like pulse pounding. Like, modern sports anime is a lot more exciting than older sports anime. I mean, shit, put even Hajime no Ippo, which is what, how many years old at this point? Like 10?
Yeah, roughly.
10 years old. Put that up against Touch, and it's like a Michael Bay film compared to the pacing and Touch.
Well, I don't know. Big Windup is pretty freaking slow.
Yeah, that's true, too. But, you know, these are, again, chiefly these are character dramas.
Right.
So they're not necessarily going to be... They spend plenty of time on the sport that they're involved in, and usually the games can be kind of exciting, but, you know, I don't know.
There are some really bad sports shows. Let's see, I tried to watch this one that was about judo, and I wanted to... I wanted to throw the TV off a cliff. That was bad. And Major went on inexplicably for 6 seasons and a movie.
Yeah.
And it's awful.
Yeah, Major's really boring. God, it's boring.
Boring and so cliche that, like, you can almost mime... If you've seen enough anime, you can mime along the dialogue as you're seeing it for the first time.
You just write the rest of the show yourself.
Yeah.
Like, to the word.
Oto-san, shinja dame!
I was really, really bored by... I had to sit through at least a season of Prince of Tennis and found it to be very, very dull.
I never understood the appeal of Prince of Tennis.
Well,
never.
Okay, but you do it from a commercial standpoint. Like, what sold Prince of Tennis were the pretty boys. That was it.
Yeah, you know, yes, I get that part, but holy shit, how desperate are these for Joshi?
At the time, pretty desperate.
Okay, yeah, you're right.
The market wasn't catering to them at all at that point.
Those weren't even characters. Those were just like, I will be the strongest. I am not the strongest. Next.
You are not the strongest. I am the strongest. Oh, no. Here is a person to challenge my strength. Yeah. No, super boring. God, Prince of Tennis. Ugh. Yeah, no, there's lots of really boring stuff. In terms of, like, stuff that is exciting,
it's the character-driven stuff.
Hajime no Ippo. Yeah, I mean, if you're not into the characters, none of this stuff's going to be exciting no matter what. But, I mean, I don't know.
Initial D was super exciting.
Initial D was super exciting for a little while.
I stayed with it through the whole thing.
I didn't get through season 3?
3 was the movie.
3 was the movie.
So it goes 1, 2, 4.
I think I never started the 4th season.
Okay.
First two were pretty good. Okay, moving on. Madman04 asks, do you think Pony Canyon USA will adopt similar tactics to Aniplex in terms of home video releases? Well, we don't like to engage in speculation.
Yeah, truth is, I don't think they know at this point.
Yeah, they haven't announced any of that stuff, so you'll know when they say something. I mean, you just wrote in Answer Man that Aniplex USA's model is kind of the rung that everyone's reaching for.
Right.
At this point, they see that success and say, we want to do that.
At the same time, Aniplex USA has Japanese people that have basically been a significant part of the U.S. anime scene for a decade plus.
Yeah.
You know, over a decade, actually. They were at Pioneer from some of the earliest days.
Yeah, that's Henry Goto, right?
Henry Goto and Hiroitsu Komoto.
Right.
And both of those, both of them are, you know, some of the best, brightest in the industry. No other anime company has that sort of experience with the U.S., and they are all, they know that and are freaked out by it. So they're going to need the help of some U.S. partner or somebody that knows what they're doing. So whatever they do is probably going to be dictated by that. Nobody really knows even what Pony Canyon has at this point, because although they've been part of production committees for years, they've never been a licensor since the like early 90s. You look at their list of availabilities and it's like a one page Excel sheet of mostly old OVAs that you forgot existed.
Yeah.
So we don't know what they're going to pick up from the stuff they're on the production committee on. I have a feeling that what currently exists is probably just going to be a shell to take Crunchyroll subtitles, marry them with the video, and upload them to Hulu.
Right, because that's a pretty much, it's a reliable way to make money at this point.
A lot of money, and, you know, why share that? There's no good reason to.
Yeah, we don't know yet, and, you know, it's too early it's too early to responsibly speculate if we're gonna speculate. To say what's going to go on with that, I hope that they you're absolutely right that they need people who know how the U.S. industry works on board, if only to proofread their press releases. Is all I'm saying.
Yeah.
Turn it into real English, guys. Can't be that tough to get someone who speaks English natively to look at that first.
We forget how insulated they are from the rest of the world over there.
Okay, also from the same guy, why do you think Sentai Filmworks chose to dub Dog and Scissors over Golden Time, despite the former not being popular? Well, who knows? I mean, these are internal metrics, right? So they're deciding what's going to get a dub and what's not. Maybe they got Dog and Scissors for nothing and decided, you know, if they throw a dub on it, it won't, you know, change their potential profit from it one way or the other. You know, who knows?
You know, a lot of this also goes into just how they think they can sell the show.
Yeah.
You know, you can either rely on the existing fans or say, hey, this show has a really obvious pitch I can make to a really obvious potential viewer. Golden Time, maybe not so much.
Yeah. It's also, you know, Dog and Scissors might be something that they've pre-sold to a streaming service that wants a dub.
Right.
Yeah. Golden Time, maybe not. Same guy, do you think the rise of streaming media is helping or hurting the popularity of anime in North America? That's easy. Helping.
Definitely helping.
Big time.
Hugely helping.
Yeah, nothing more to say on that. Scotty415, nope. Well, yeah, we get this question a lot. Any ideas on what could have made Edge of Tomorrow more successful in theaters? Have you guys read the book? I read the graphic novel.
I bought the book on Amazon. It's one of aforementioned books on my Kindle I haven't been able to get to.
Yeah. I don't know what would have helped that movie. It's a good movie. I really liked it. Original, quote-unquote original, even though it's based on a book, IP like that, it's a tough sell to an American audience. I don't think the marketing was all that great, but I don't even know how you would have sold that movie otherwise. Like, I can't come up with a marketing campaign that would have been better than what they had. The title was super generic. I don't think Edge of Tomorrow sells it better than All You Need Is Kill or whatever, Live, Die, Repeat, whatever it is now.
I do maintain Edge of Tomorrow is so generic sounding that nobody could even remember what movie that was.
Yeah, no, you're right. And I honestly do think that All You Need Is Kill is a cool sounding, catchy, weird name that would have maybe put some more butts in seats. Maybe not enough to really sway the box office fortunes one way or the other, but it's a much better title. But it's out on Blu-ray now, and it's out there for the world to enjoy, and it got made, so just leave it at that. Whether or not it made any money is irrelevant to all of us who aren't profit participants.
Yes, it is.
It got made. There you go. You wouldn't want a sequel to that, so who cares? All right, Custom Zaku asks, so a couple of days ago I realized that October was marked year 12 of me doing preview guides.
Oh my god.
Yes. 12 years. started in October 2002. We only did fall for a while, then we did spring and fall. And then Chris eventually was like, okay, you got to do winter too. And now you also got to do summer. Just do them all. It's like, all right. And I was looking at like 2006, 2008-ish, and going through the list of shows, and there would be like one huge hit, and then a bunch of stuff that I don't even remember existing. Just never really put out a DVD. No one seems to remember it at all. And I started listing titles on Twitter as kind of a joke, like, why isn't anyone asking for a limited edition DVD of this show? And just listing titles. I pulled one out that I had forgotten. Viz weirdly started streaming it like years later. It was like Psychic Detective Neuro or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That was the one. And people were like, oh, I remember that. Nothing else got any kind of like, oh, yeah. The titles are escaping me even now. But it's like, it's kind of like the middle of the Moe boom. So a lot of like failed shows based on like Galgay that didn't really catch on and just kind of fell on their face. So a lot of that stuff, just literally things people don't even remember the title of, came out in these years. And it was interesting to go through and see just how much stuff is forgotten. So you'll have like a season that has 15 shows. One of them is Haruhi Suzumiya. One of them is Nana. The rest is shit no one remembers.
Yeah. I actually just randomly, while you were talking, pulled up the Spring 07 guide.
Yeah.
And that one actually, over half of it got released here.
Yeah, well, a lot of it does get, as you get into 2007 and especially 2008, most of it got a release and you recognize most of the titles.
Yeah.
But like 05, 06, 07, early 07, not so much. And we didn't do, I don't think we did winter guides back then, so, you know, who knows what was in the winter season.
Yeah, definitely.
It's interesting. It's not really a statement of quality one way or the other or anything like that. It's just amusing how much of this stuff just disappears into the ether. No one even remembers it. Like, Mike will be writing columns about it, you know, 5 years from now or whatever.
Love Doll, Lovely Idol. What the fuck was that?
Exactly what it says on the label, probably.
Crescent Love? That's a show?
It's a name. What does that mean?
I'll never forget. I still maintain that the most ludicrously meaningless anime title ever is Underbar Summer, written _ Summer.
Yeah, I was having that conversation with Hope the other day where it's like season two of something is demarked, but the exact same title except it has an asterisk or a tilde at the end.
Or an apostrophe meaning prime.
Oh, God. Jeez. Just come on. I prefer, like, the random, like, nonsense English word thrown in. Crescent Moon, try. Season two. That's fine. At least there's something there that, like, the encyclopedia will pick up on, and it won't totally, like, I won't make a giant mistake by forgetting to include the apostrophe at the end of the title. Yeah. Let's see. Fallen Messiah X asks, Sailor Moon Crystal is 7 episodes in. Does it, can it have time to recover in either TV airing or home release? Yeah. Well, that show seems like kind of a wreck. I don't see a lot of praise. I see hardcore Moony fans getting defensive over it.
But it's always like it's not that bad sort of defensive. It's not really this is a good show defensive.
Yeah, it's definitely a it's not that bad, you guys, kind of defense. Like, it's not like a full-throated this show is great and you guys are assholes defense.
Mm-hmm.
It's well, you know, doesn't seem like it's that bad, which is
that's what passes for an admission of yes, it's that bad these days.
Pretty much, I guess. I don't know, like, some people do seem to be enjoying it, but some screenshots of, like, the Blu-ray version have come out, and it's obviously very heavily touched up. So whatever version winds up on home video, I guess the eventual licensor, which will probably be Viz, will have that version, and it'll look better. But the show, like, you know, given the number of look at this hilarious animation mistake, like, GIFs that come out every other Saturday... it doesn't seem like it's doing that well. Who knows if it can turn around? I don't know if if they had plans to do, like, a bunch more, or if this was supposed to be, like, the great resurrection of Sailor Moon as a franchise, and we're gonna, you know, it's gonna be Sailor Moon forever after this, but if that's what they used to launch the great resurrection, then I don't think it's got... I don't think it has much of a chance.
The great resurrection rises out of the ground about 2 feet and then falls flatly on its face.
Yeah, pretty much.
I also do wonder how much the bi-weekly schedule has hurt it, because it's really hard to get momentum with a serialized story like that.
Yeah, that's true.
That's a long time to wait between episodes.
It's a long time to wait between episodes. It's weird that there is a wait between episodes, because the animation is super cheap. Like, it's not like they're meticulously spending a lot of time making this really expensive show. It's a cheaply animated thing. I don't understand why it takes 2 weeks.
I maintain my guess that somebody behind the scenes is being a nightmare.
Mm. Well, yeah, and if this show, Naoko Takeuchi has a reputation for being a nightmare to work with. If this is supposed to be, like, we went up to her exacting standards and the result was Sailor Moon Crystal, okay, well...
It's like that Simpsons episode where Homer gets to build a car.
I don't know if it's quite that, but maybe. I don't know. I kind of want to see how that show wraps up. I don't even know what it's scheduled, how many episodes it's scheduled for. But what becomes of that show will be interesting to watch, and I do think it will mean, if that thing is a total failure, you're probably not going to see new Sailor Moon anything for a very long time. All right. Dusty Cram Cram asks, any horror or Halloween films you like to revisit every year around this time?
Not a Halloween guy.
You don't seem like a Halloween guy.
No, I'm a Christmas guy.
Yeah, me too. But I still do watch a lot of horror movies during October because it's fun. Every year I try to watch franchises that I haven't seen, like all of the films in that franchise. Last year it was Freddy and Jason, which was a trial, let me tell you. This year it's Halloween, like the Michael Myers films, and Phantasm. And those Halloween movies are fucking boring and old, but Phantasm is crazy and old. Those movies are insane. So I'm enjoying Phantasm. It's just weird, weird stuff.
I did just do a big binge purchase at Amoeba Records.
Yeah.
And I rated their... Now that I have a region-free Blu-ray player, I rated their import section.
Oh, yeah.
And they had the Masters of Cinema UK Blu-ray, which has not been released in the U.S., of Onibaba.
Oh, really?
The legendary 60s Japanese horror film that's supposed to be one of the best horror films ever made.
Yeah, it's that one in Houseu that everyone knows about, and that's it.
Well, Houseu is supposed to be more tongue-in-cheek. This one is outright creepy.
Right.
That will be what I watch this year. I'm looking forward to that. I'm actually not even going to be in town for Halloween this year, so.
Oh, you can go. Yeah, right. You're going to be in New York. You can go to the West Village.
Yay.
It's the biggest Halloween party on Earth, Justin.
Or I could shit directly into my hands and eat it.
Okay. Emperor Matt XV, what are the most prominent titles that you plan to write about for Buried Treasure that didn't hold up?
The one that comes to mind immediately is probably the most of the Rimmick World OVAs. I ended up writing about Laughing Target because that one did hold up, but honestly, I tried to get through Fire Tripper and Supergirl Marisa Chojo and what was the third one? There's a third one I'm missing. They do not hold up. Oh, the other one's Mermaid Forest, and honestly, even that's not even supposed to be part of that OVA. But yeah, honestly, they're really weird and cheesy and have some bizarre directorial touches that just make no sense. Marisa Chojo specifically is super slow moving, and although it has a couple isn't this cute moments, it's just not, it does not hold up at all.
Yeah, Marisa Chojo, I think I saw, like, that was its own purple tape.
Yep. I think. Oh, no, that was a CPM release, early CPM release.
Yeah, but it was fan subbed first, right?
No. It was one of the really, really early VHS releases that came out like in 92.
Then I must have watched someone's bootleg.
Oh.
I don't remember seeing a case for that. just a purple tape with the Marin.
Yeah,
that's JoJo logo.
When I first discovered anime on that with that mysterious line of tapes at Blockbuster, that was one of them, and it was really weird and foreign. And you pop it in today, and it's really weird and foreign.
Yeah, not in a good way.
No.
All right, couple left here. Evan SVR asks, is the "you haven't read the source material for X" response elitism, a defense against criticism, or both?
It's just a shutdown.
It's a shutdown. Yeah, it's a your criticism of the show isn't valid because you haven't read the book, so you don't know what you're talking about. I am of the opinion.
Elitism just implies that that you think those people are better.
Well, elitism, there is an element of elitism to it. I think that it became, because access to anime stopped being the gatekeeper for the cool kids in the anime club. Like, access to the shows stopped being the thing that separated the elite dorks from the rest of the dorks. There had to be some other way for people to establish themselves as the superior fan to all of you sheeple or whatever. And now it seems like I read the fan translations of these light novels and or played the fan translation of the visual novel that this game is based on, and therefore my knowledge of this franchise is superior, and only people like me are capable of determining whether or not this anime adaptation of light novel or visual novel is up to snuff. Most people don't have that kind of time or really interest in rereading or seeing a same story over and over and over again, or they're not interested in light novels and visual novels. They just want to watch a TV show. So that's how they can kind of lord it over people that way. Where it's, well, you clearly haven't read the original light novel for this, so you aren't qualified to tell me whether or not it's any good. That I think is the element of elitism. Personally, as a rebuttal of criticism of something, if it's a TV show, unless there's a disclaimer in front of it that says you will not understand anything in this TV show unless you have read this, played this, done this, I assume you are supposed to be able to just sit down and enjoy that show on its own, as its own thing, as its own story. Since I haven't seen an example of a show that has that disclaimer in front of it, I think that a show that is incomprehensible unless you've read a book beforehand is a failure at what it is trying to do. I don't think it should be incomprehensible unless the book it's based on is also incomprehensible from the start. Why is it like this? I don't think it's a valid rebuttal of criticism. It's another one for the checklist of objective reasons why your subjective opinion is wrong.
Yep.
Okay. Last two from Branko Berkson. He asks, are you sad to see Carl leave? So I haven't mentioned this on the show, I don't think, but Carl Kimlinger retired after a very long stint with us. Sad to see him go, sure. He was a great writer.
He's been writing for us for, what, 8 years?
Forever. Just forever.
Yeah.
but he had a 9-to-5 that eventually took over, and, you know, when you get a full-time job, it tends to take, you tend to want to use your free time for leisure and not, let's turn my hobby into work. Because there, you know, he was what we refer to as a staff critic, so there are expectations. He gets a mailer of stuff that he has to write up. It's not just fun and games, let's sit around and watch anime. It's, I owe my editor 1,200 words on this by the end of the week. It's a job. It's a freelance job. So, you know, eventually, you know, he needed to put it away because he had to focus on the rest of his life. And that's fine, and I'm sad to see him go. He was a great writer. I really loved working with Carl. He was a good guy to work with, too. Really good sense of humor, and I thought he was very thoughtful. But taking his place, we have on that in that staff critic role, we have Nick Creamer, who we brought in, known on Twitter as Bobda. We brought him in for daily streaming, and I was really impressed with his writing, so I offered him the spot. And he's—you'll see more from him, but we brought him in right before Preview Guide, so that's what he's doing now. But yeah, so sad to see Carl go. But it's one of those things where, well, you know, everyone's got to move on at some point. And he did. So best of luck to him and whatever he's moving on to. Last question, also from Branko Bergson. Did you see Miku on Letterman? Any thoughts on that?
I couldn't be bothered to get up from wherever I was sitting to go across the room.
Well, you didn't want to see the arrival of Miku and, I don't know, the late-night CBS audience debut?
the 60-year-olds in the audience going, okay, here's another thing from the internet I don't understand. Oh, right then.
Yeah. I laughed because what it tells me, like, what I took most of that, what I took away from that the most was that people don't really have a good idea of what talk shows are for now, the audience for them, or how they're put together. Because I saw a lot of people saying, like, David Letterman must be super confused. What is this? Okay, David Letterman is a legend. Nothing happens on that show that he doesn't personally approve of or was his idea at this point. He's at the end of his run. He's not doing anything for rating stunts. Here's what happened. David Letterman's kids at some point pulled up a Miku video, or he heard about it from one of his writers or something and said, that sounds weird and funny, let's book it. And they did. That's what happened. Also, the penetration in terms of, like, audience share, like, minds and hearts for The Late Show with David Letterman on CBS is effectively, in 2014, nothing. So, it's not gonna do anything. It's not gonna suddenly have the mainstream media abuzz about Hatsune Miku. You're not gonna suddenly see an explosion of trend stories about it. It was a gimmick novelty that he had on his talk show. That's it.
You got more press out of Hatsune Miku being at AX.
They did, because it was a fresh thing back then. It's the press that covers that kind of thing, they're bored of Hatsune Miku already. So her being on Letterman is a fun clickbait story, but I mean, it was when they announced it. Now it's on. Now people can watch the clip and go, haha, that's weird, and move on. Not going to have any great cultural impact.
I don't understand how anybody is still not bored with Hatsune Miku. I mean, that gimmick, I mean, it's just a gimmick.
There's
no character. Yeah. There's no anything. It's just that character design and this odd, you know, singy synth.
Yeah, I mean, Super Sonico has an anime.
Yeah, at least that has a story.
Sort of, yeah.
Kind of. A story in air quotes.
Yeah, there's a pretense of a story and character there. Miku doesn't have that. Have they improved? I don't watch a lot of Miku videos. I'm assuming you don't either. But I don't know if, like, the technology's improved and it doesn't sound like... doesn't sound like it used to anymore, or it's getting more realistic or closer to a real voice, or the...
I don't follow it enough. I mean, I hear it every once in a while, and it seems like it's getting a little more natural sounding, but it's like, it's still hollow, it's still not anything, and, you know, it obviously, when something like that's open to the public, it's misused like crazy. It is literally being moe for a certain kind of synthesizer.
Yeah, or you know, I mean, I think the allure is more than just the moe thing. The allure is like, this is the future virtual pop star. Oh my God, we're living in Macross Plus. You know, that kind of thing.
No, that it's still way, way, way too easy to exploit young girls with delusions of grandeur.
We don't have to resort to this just yet.
Ugh. No.
Well, anyway. All right. Okay. I think that wraps us up. Justin, thanks for hanging out all this time.
Of course.
And all right. Okay. That's our show. Hope you enjoyed it. The theme song is Bucharest by the band New Division. You can check them out at newdivisionmusic.com. Don't forget to subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave us a rating and review. We would really appreciate it. And we'll see you all next time.